Today we're going to speak with former Twins manager Sam Ely. Sam was born in Astoria, New York on January 21st, 1922. Sam played Major League Baseball from 1947 through 1956 with the Red Sox, the Senators, the White Sox, the Orioles, the Reds, and finally the Indians. After his Major League career was done, Sam played in the minors for several seasons before going into coaching. Sam coached for the Washington Senators under Cookie Lavaggetto in 1959 and 1960. When the Senators moved to Minnesota and became the Twins in 1961, Sam started out as the coach, and later in the 1961 season, he was named the Twins manager. Sam was the second Twins manager of all time, and he was the first manager to coach the team to a World Series, which he did in 1965. The team won 102 games that year, but unfortunately lost to the Los Angeles Dodgers in the World Series by 4-3. Okay, Sam, you were born in Astoria, New York. Did you play a lot of sports when you were growing up, and what was your favorite sport?
Well, you used to play a lot of stick ball, like they always play with a rubber ball, the broom handle, and played an awful lot of basketball. I loved basketball more than I did baseball. And in fact, I went to New York University on a basketball scholarship. And I got interested in baseball, and my coach there was very friendly with the Red Sox, and he used to drive me up to Fenway. I'd break out a few times, and that's how I got interested in and the Red Sox finally signed me.
Yeah, I had read somewhere that you were a real star basketball player for NYU, but yet you pursued baseball. Why?
Well, to be honest with you, I found out you can get out of some classes by playing baseball too. And I had a great coach, and we had a great team, a great bunch of guys. And I had two uncles that played baseball, and they got me so interested in it that I had to follow their footsteps. Al and Tony Cuccinello, they were both major league ball players.
You played in the majors as an outfielder and a first baseman sometimes. I think you played for the Red Sox, the Senators, the White Sox, the Orioles, the Reds, and the Indians from 1947 to 1956.
Yeah, I had exactly 10 years and one day in the majors as a player. And then 6.5 as a manager of the Twins.
When you look back on your career as a ball player, how would you describe yourself?
Well, let me tell you how I describe myself. I've checked the statistics of these ball players today. Ones that I had practically the same statistics as 278 lifetime or 268, excuse me, I wish it was 268 or whatever, right in that area. I hit more home runs than those guys. I drove in more runs than those guys. And I had more assists than those guys. The money they're getting today, I would have got today under these conditions, I would have been getting $10 million a year for 10 years.
You know, you kind of read my mind. That my next question for you was going to be, what's the most money you ever made as a pro baseball player in a season?
Oh, I only made something like $19,000, $20,000. And you know what, John, they always say, yeah, but in those days it was worth a lot of money. But I don't think it was worth $10 million a year, same salary.
No, I agree with you there.
John, let me tell you something. I am looking at the Manager of the Year plaque that I got in 1965 when we won the pennant. The only problem I have with that plaque is that they should have every ball player's name on it that was on the team that year. Whether they were there for a month, 2 months, the whole year, whatever. They're the ones that got me that plaque. Not that I got it. I managed, yes, but they played the game, and they deserve their names on that plaque.
I can understand that. can understand that. I think you played, after you last played in the major leagues, I think you spent a couple of years playing some minor league ball, what, in 57 and 58. And then you became a coach for the Washington Senators in 59 and 60 under Cookie Lavaggetto.
Correct.
And then what kind of a guy was Cookie Lavaggetto?
Oh, he's a great fellow to play for. He made me his first base coach, and then he didn't like the way the guy at third base was handling the runners scoring and taking extra bases, and he finally put me over third base. In fact, I used to room with him when we were at home. He was a great fellow. And when I finally got the job with Minnesota, Calvin Griffith had a fire, naturally, and went ahead of meeting with the press in the Minnesota Twins manager's room, Cookie Lavaggetto said, "You writers take care of this guy. He's a damn good kid."
That's pretty nice. What did you think when you first heard that the Washington Senators were moving to Minnesota and would become the Minnesota Twins?
Well, I actually didn't know what to expect. I know I played in Minneapolis. When I was with the Red Sox, they sent me down to Minneapolis. I had a 4-for-6 day that very first game. And then the pitching got a little tougher, and they sent me to Louisville. But moving to Minneapolis, Minnesota, and St. Paul, to your Twins, I didn't know what to expect, really. And then when I finally got out there, you found out that the people, the fans were fantastic, great eating places, great shopping areas. Everything was great. The people couldn't have been any better to you.
Great. You know, on June 6th, I think it was, of 1961, Cookie Lavaggetto was asked to take a week's vacation by Calvin Griffith, and you were named to manage in his absence. What did you think about that?
Well, let me tell you exactly how that happened, John. I was in my hotel room listening to the radio, and I got a call from Calvin Griffith, and he said, "Come on to my office and put a shirt and tie on." Now, I don't know why the whole shirt and tie, but I did what he asked. I went up there, and he said to me, "Did you ever think of managing?" And I said, "Well, I guess every ball player would like to manage someday." So he said, "I want you to watch the club more closely. I know you've been watching the players every day, watching what they do and can't do and this and that. And I'm going to make a change. I'm going to make a change in about a week." And it wasn't maybe a half hour later, he's on the phone calling Cookie Lavaggetto to tell him that he's going to be fired. So then he finally reached Lavaggetto. Then he tells his secretary, "Okay, you can let the press in now." Well, we were playing the Yankees at the time, and the Yankee press was in town, and that's why he had me put a shirt and tie on, because he knew they were going to interview me.
Mm-hmm. A couple of weeks later there, Calvin Griffith eventually did fire Cookie Lavaggetto as the manager, and you took over as the manager. Well, what was it like for you that day?
Well, I must have made out 7-8 lineups. I didn't know which way to turn, really. It was very rewarding, but very put me into a lot of anxious moments. Just, what do you do? And I didn't watch everything that Lavaggetto did, you know, prepare and this and that. Just did my job as a coach, went in, talked to the players, then went on a bench and coached first base, and then all of a sudden I'm the manager. It came out all of a sudden. That was it.
It must have been very bittersweet to get a manager job, which everyone covets, but yet have it come at the expense of your friend.
Oh, yeah. Well, matter of fact, when I got the job, and one of my first trips was to California, and I called Cookie Lavaggetto immediately to tell him how much I enjoyed coaching for him, and we've had a great friendship until he passed away.
Mm-hmm. You
you ended up finishing the 61 season and as with the team in seventh place, and in 62 you finished second, and in 63 you finished third, and in 64 you finished up in sixth place again. What kind of a team did you think you had going into the 1965 season?
Well, I knew we had to have more speed for one thing. And we made, Jim Lemon was a damn good ball player and a great friend of mine, but we made him a coach and we went for more speed. And Billy Martin was my coach, and during spring training, I said, Billy, we're going to run a lot more. I don't care if they're running into outs. We just want to get them running, running, running. Because in those days, a little like today, you can see how valuable speed is. And I had some guys that could run, but we had to utilize them more often. Versailles, Oliva, Ted Uleb, who finally joined us later, Sandy Balestino. We had to utilize that speed more often so we could stay out of double plays, take extra bases, and so forth, like the teams do today.
Okay. What are some of your favorite memories of that 65 season when you managed the Twins to their first ever American League pennant? And the team finished with 102 wins, which is still the most wins a Twins team has ever had.
Well, my fondest moments, well, I'll tell you, was during the World Series, really. Because my family came out to Minnesota, my mother, my brother, their wives, and my sister, and a great friend of mine came out with him, and on the elevator, I didn't notice till after the game, on the elevator, my mother met the vice president, Hubert Humphrey, who was from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So after the game, I said to my mother, I understand you met the vice president. And she was an Italian immigrant now, mind you, but spoke very good English and so forth. And she said, with a straight face, he met me.
No, I love that. That's great.
And I think that was one of the brightest spots of my entire life.
That's great.
One other time, though, I have to tell you that, but this was in my rookie year, 47, that my mother and father were in the stands in Yankee Stadium, and I hit my first home run. And as I'm rounding the bases and I'm rounding second, I could see where they were sitting, and they had the greatest smile on their face that you could imagine.
Well, they had to be proud.
Oh, and you know what? The traveling secretary got me that ball, and I signed it to my mother.
That's really nice. Well,
that made me feel special.
Well, you had some nice power. You hit like double figure home runs, what, five or so different seasons?
I really don't know what it was, but I know I led the league in doubles one year, and I did hit a few triples. But one of the things I was most proud of is I had about 93 runs batted in when I was with Washington. And Eddie Yost and Mickey Vernon were my teammates, and they said, we're going to get on base to you so you can knock in that 100. Well, for some reason, I didn't play the final week because they had a boy by the name of Frank Campos, an outfielder that they wanted to look at, and so they played him the remainder of that season. And I just would have loved, because, you know, that's the magic number,
yep.
100 runs batted in.
Well, you got 94 that season. You
did pretty
good. 94. You hit 274, I think.
Yeah, I was around 270 for the hitter. I thought it was, well, it's the best I could do. What else could I say?
Yeah. When you think back to the 1965 World Series, is there anything that you would have liked to have done differently now that you look back on it?
No, you know, John, I don't think so. You know, one thing comes into my mind now and then, just now and then, but it's second-guessing myself, and I don't really mean to. I pitched Camilo Pascual the third game, and I knew in my mind he had a big overhand curve, a great curve, and kind of a high kick, and I said to myself, you know, with these Dodgers, the way they run, switches and everything, I said, maybe, just maybe, I should use Jim Merritt, who was a left-hander, but when I used Merritt in one of those games, they hit him pretty good. So I feel like I made the right move because in my heart I owed it to Camilo Pasquale because he was a great pitcher for me.
He was a great pitcher for the Twins.
You know, I wrote to Gillibrew, Guru, Tony Oliva, and they all sent me beautiful pictures. Beautiful autographed pictures. I got one 11x14 of Rod Carew on his knee with six silver bats, maybe seven, for each year he led the league. And it says, I enjoyed so much playing for you as my manager. And the same thing, like Gilbo said the same words, and Tony Oliva. And you know that the day we won the pennant in Washington, I introduced Frank Rossi, and before that game, Frank Rossi said to me, you know, Skip, I dreamed that I did something to help win this ball game that would clinch the pennant. Oh, I don't know, of course, my memory isn't that good right now, but I remember him, he got on second base, and I don't know if we bunted him over on a sacrifice fly, and we won the game, I don't know, 1-0, 2-1, something like that, and Jim Carter pitched it. And Hubert Humphrey called me, it was another great day. Calvin Griffith called me, it was ecstatic, really. But Cruzy told me that day. He was a great little ball player. I should have had him up to the big league sooner because the scout that watched him an awful lot said, Sam, this kid can't do anything but help you win. He wasn't exciting or great for any one thing, hitting, fielding, whatever, but he'll help you win. And he was so right.
Well, when I talked to Frank, he had nothing but great things to say about you. And, you know, other players that I've talked to, you know, Bernie Allen, Rich Rollins, all those guys, you know, they think the world of you.
Well, they were something special. That's why I said their names belong on that Manager of the Year plaque. Absolutely. Jim Cott pitched great for me. Marquette Grant, Al Worthington, Dick Stigman. And you know what was great about that ball club? I had never had any complaints because Earl Batty, everybody looked up to Earl Batty. Bob Allison, Camilo Pasquale, Harmon Jobu. And if anything happened in the clubhouse that, you know, was a little, just a slightly disrupting, those guys would take care of it and it never reached my office. Those guys were fabulous. And the guys that were on the bench, oh, I can't even think of the names. Joe Nosek comes to the line as one, and they were fantastic. Not playing all that much, but doing their part to help win. Bunting, hit and run, steal the base, steal signs for me. Everything that goes with winning ball games.
And they were all part of a team.
Exactly. And you know what? When I talked to Harmon about a week ago, he said to me, you know what made you a good manager? And I didn't know what to expect. He said, you let us play the game. You just let us play the game, and that was it. You kept us happy, play, have some fun.
And I think that's a good point. I think today some managers tend to overmanage.
Oh, absolutely. You're telling me. I ran into a couple of them, which I wouldn't mention. You'd think they invented the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In 1966, you finished second, and on June 9th of 67, the Twins were 25-25, and you were kind of still in sixth place at that point, and Calvin Griffith replaced you with Cal Ermer. Can you share with us what you think happened to cause Calvin to change managers?
Well, honestly, I don't know. I don't know to this day. All I know is I went to the boat. My family flew in that morning. I met them, had them put in an apartment. I went to the ballpark, and I had a call from Calvin Griffith. He said, come on up, I want to see you. And I went up to his office. He said, I'm thinking of making a change, but I want you in my organization. I positively want you doing something in my... To this day, I have no reason. and he was in my city office because I got there very early. We talked baseball. He invited me up to his office for lunch with him and his wife. He said to me, I don't know if he knew something was going to happen. I don't know. I have no idea. If anything ever happens to you, you call me immediately because you're going to work for me. But John, I honestly don't know why, but there's something in the back of my mind. There was somebody in the front office that I did not get along with at all. He was such a tremendous prevaricator. He did things to kind of hurt me, sneaky-like, and I think to this day, and he was very close to Calvin Griffith, but Calvin Griffith found out later, we tried to tell Calvin, his brothers and me, my coaches, be careful of that guy, be careful. Well, anyway, when Calvin wrote a book about it, he mentioned that in his book. I should have listened. And I can't tell you who that guy is. I certainly wouldn't, but I think he had something to do with it.
Well, I'm going to have to go back to my book about that Calvin wrote here as I look at it and reread it again and see if I can find out.
And, John, I don't want you to use it.
No.
I don't want you to use that guy's name or guess who it might have been and so forth.
No, that's...
You've got to promise me that.
I promise. Not a problem.
Thank you very much.
What happened, Sam, after you left the Twins?
I went to see Mr. Yorkie right away, and he and Dick O'Connell got together. They went out of the room. It was in their press room, and they come back and said, you're working for us. And that was, my contract ran out 67, so 68 I started with the Red Sox, and I was with them for, 35 years or something like that.
Yeah, you scouted for them and so forth for a long time.
Right, I ran the minor leagues in spring training. I did scouting, bunting instruction, outfield instruction, everything that was scouting, all facets of the game.
Who do you think was the best ball player that you ever saw?
Oh, the best ball player? Without a doubt, Willie Mays.
Really?
Willie Mays, and I'll tell you why. Everybody talks about batting average and so forth. Well, he hit damn well, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
He hit a lot of home runs, and remember this, in San Francisco, the wind was always blowing in bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit a home runs in Frisco, and as Frank Malzone always told me, when you went there to watch a game, a night game, you had to wear long johns, it was so cold. So those balls did not travel as good. And he still hit, 600 home runs, something over 600?
Yep.
But another great thing involved was, he stole 40, 50 bases every year. He was a great outfielder with a great arm, run bases tremendously, stole bases, speed, never threw to the wrong base, broke up double plays, took extra bases. He did everything very exciting and just great. So how can you say, Joe DiMaggio was great. They argued Joe DiMaggio on him. Joe was a great ball player, don't misunderstand. But he didn't steal bases like Mays. He didn't hit as many home runs. Well, he didn't play as long as Mays. But he wasn't as fast as Mays. He didn't cover as much ground, even though he was a great center fielder. I don't know how anybody could say it wasn't Willie Mays.
Okay. What about Ted Williams? What can you tell us about him?
Well, I'd have to start from the start. When I was going to NYU, New York University, as I mentioned earlier, my coach brought me up to Fenway to work out, and somebody said to me, okay, get in the cage and take 5 swings. So I took 4, and I let the next one go by, and his voice behind the cage said, why did you take that pitch? And I said, well, I thought it was outside, but I'm looking. And that voice said, well, enough for a strike. So when I finished, I went around the cage, and this guy says, "Come here, kid." And it was Ted Williams. And from that day on, he took me under his wing, and I used to have to warm up with him every day. And during spring training, my first spring training, I finished my batting, I went to first base, then I had a bunch of over, you go to second, the next batter hit behind you, you go to third, the guy next guy's supposed to hit a sacrifice fly, you tag up and score. And as I'm going around towards shortstop, I'm going to go to right field, this guy in left field says, "Hey, come on out here." And I go out there, and it was Ted Williams, and he said, "Aren't you the kid that worked out with us in whatever the year was, 43 or 2 or whatever?" And I said, "Yeah." And he started talking hitting. If you were ever around Ted Williams, he would talk hitting, hitting, hitting. Now then I said, "Well, you know, I'm not very sure about playing the outfield, you know, this way or that way." He says, "Wait a minute. You go to that little guy in center field, that's Don DiMaggio. You introduce yourself to him. I'm going to yell to him right now that you're coming over. You ask him the questions about the outfield." And that was my introduction to Ted Williams. And then I used to have to warm up with him every day. He'd call me, "Hey, Neil, let's go."
Okay. I think you were quoted someplace from what I saw on the internet that, you know, that Sandy Koufax was the only pitcher that you would pay to watch pitch. And I think you actually faced Koufax back in 55 in Sandy's second major league start, and he gave up 2 hits that game, and you got one of them, a double.
That's right. I remember that very distinctly. And you know what? I got to tell you the story. I think Lazuski got the other hit. Well, anyway, during a World Series, he beats me the game in California. And I take my shower, go under the stands to go to the bus to take us back to the hotel. And there's Koufax in the doorway with a towel wrapped around. He had just beat me. And he pointed his finger at me and he said, "You got a hit off me." That was 10 years later.
Wow.
He remembered that, and it's in his book.
That's pretty amazing.
He is, I think, the greatest pitcher I ever saw. But I also have to say, well, you know, Warren Spahn, Bob Gibson, but I didn't see them a lot as much as I saw. Well, I didn't see Koufax that much, but such style and grace, and if his elbow held up, there's no telling how many games he would have won. I'm sure you probably looked up this one hitters, no hitters.
Yep.
It's fantastic. You can't believe what a guy could do. And such style and grace. We had him on the ropes in the last game of the 65 season. He was a little wild, but once he had it, got it going, brother, you know right throughout. And he beat me 2-0 in the last game, but it was a great series and a great individual. Matter of fact, John, I just wrote him 2 weeks ago to ask him for an autographed picture so I can give it to my grandson.
Well, that will be a real prize for him.
Oh, and how. I got one from Jim Rice, Brooks Robinson. Oh, these guys are... And they were such great... Al Kaline just got one 2 days ago. Those guys were fantastic, and I got them all for my grandkids.
That's really nice. I try to get some Twins autographs on baseball cards, so that's really fun to do. And a lot of the, older ball players have more of a tendency to return the cards than some of the younger players do. And I don't sell them. I just want to, get the autographs.
Yeah, right. Well, I know that. You know, every so often, I get a lot. I'm not bragging. I'm not an egotist. But every day I get letters with pictures in them, and I sign them. But on occasion, I might get 5 of the same picture, you know. program, but I have never kept a cent. I always send it back and say thanks, but no thanks.
That's really nice of you. What, are you retired today?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not, well, I had two knees done, I had my hip out twice, I had a ruptured disc in my back, my shoulders bad, but I get along as good as I can, what the hell.
Yeah, we all do. What, you know, a final question for you, Sam. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with the fans back here in Minnesota?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Jesus, they were the greatest fans. They used to have fly-ins and cookouts on the back of their cars and stuff. And, oh, they were just absolutely wonderful. If we lost and I made a mistake or they thought I made a mistake, they booed me, but they didn't mind it. It wasn't that harsh boo, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And you know what? I have to tell you this. My wife went with me to Minnesota in the wintertime at a baseball writer's dinner. And as we're landing, my wife said to me, now this goes to show you how much we thought of Minnesota and the fans and the people. She said to me, I wouldn't mind living out here because these people are special. They do things as a family. They're wonderful to each other. They were wonderful to you as a manager, and there's great eating places, great shopping. Now we get off the plane, and it's 22 below. And there's no canopy to go to the terminal. And she looks at me and she says, forget it.
It can get cold, that's for sure.
Calvin Griffiths took us to supper that night. We had a great meal, so Calvin says, come on, I'll drive you back. And we said, oh, geez, you just had a great meal. We'll walk back. But the hotel was a block away, and we had to stop in every doorway because your nose would burn, your ankles would burn.
And
you know one other thing, John? A guy called me and he said, we'd like to have you speak at the Dunkers Club at 5 o'clock. And I said, sure, Rob, why not? I'll do it. So before the guy hung up, he says, that's 5 o'clock in the morning, you know. I said, what? And he says, 5 o'clock. So I had made the clip and I said, well, absolutely. Now, so I get up and as we're driving, there's good guys, you know how they clear the ice in hockey games?
Yep.
They were clearing the ponds, little ponds, getting the snow off the ponds. And I said, geez, that's pretty good. The gizmo's like the sleigh ride and all. He says, oh, no, it's all for hockey. They do that with every pond in Minnesota.
Yeah.
They do that so the kids can enjoy themselves playing hockey, whatever, ice skating, everything. They did everything for the families out there.
Yeah, they absolutely do a lot of things, and people enjoy being outside. And you know, I'm not a big fan of winter either, but there's still a lot of things to do. You know, you speak of the Dunkers. Do you remember Sid Hartman?
Oh, you know, I honestly think that he helped get me fired. Every time he wrote an article, it was telling how great I am. And Calvin Griffiths said, you related to that guy? I said, no, but he was absolutely a great, great friend of mine. To this day. You know Sid Hartman?
No, I don't know him. You know, I follow his, he has a newspaper column, obviously, in the Minneapolis paper. He does radio shows. You know, he's got to be in his late 80s.
Oh,
and
positively.
He works every day.
I know it. I used to be on the air with him before every ball game. I was getting paid a little bit of money to do an article, get on a program when it was like a 10-minute program. He used to write me up so damn much. Honest to God, I think Calvin got sick of him telling me how great I was, you know? But anyway, John, I think my kids and my grandkids are at the front door. I'm going to have to get call it quits.
And that's fine. I'm going to turn the recorder off here.